All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta. Well, good evening. This is American Vindicta. I'm your host, Doug Thornton. It is a new year. It is January the 3rd, 2022. I took this weekend to really ponder upon my thoughts of the previous year. And I try my best to look into the future. And I try to see a brighter future. Of course, I'm a man who I base a lot of current things off of previous history. And I am perplexed at how much it appears that we are repeating forms of history over and over again. We are doomed to repeat history if we do not observe and react to our current actions. We have a very, very interesting year ahead of us. Many people can speculate what they think is going to happen this year. There's probably going to be a new prophecy about a certain day of a certain month when the world will end. We're probably going to see some form of police brutality expanded upon every single news camera that's out there. And every host with no law enforcement experience will give their own reasons why law enforcement should be disbanded or defunded or whatever the excuse is. And we may even just see some, you know, actual crime from law enforcement here and there. We saw that plenty last year, didn't we? And 3 days from now, we'll start the day when we really start to see what type of a strange government we have. And we will see. We'll see what happens from the January 6th Commission. We'll see what all is to become of it. Our beloved FBI. All the fantastical things that they've been up to. We'll see what type of surprises we have this year. And by the way, when I say that, I don't mean to sound so negatively. I have had my own experiences with the FBI that have actually been very well. I've worked with the FBI. You know, on several different types of details. And, you know, overall, it's the FBI. They think they're better than everybody. Most of them were a bunch of overeducated bookworms who were given a badge and a gun and taught how to kick a door down. Very few of them were, you know, very few of them are actual hard chargers with any type of real law enforcement or combative experience. That small caliber of guys and gals that's actually in the FBI or about the only ones I trust. The rest of them, and I'll tell you what a good friend of mine who was on one of the task force told me, 80% of the FBI, hardcore leftists. Hardcore leftists. Like to the point that the conservative group and the leftist group within their own task force divided themselves in their own area that they worked in. So these guys would hang out with these guys and the rest of the group would be over here. America's finest, the FBI, can't even get along with each other. Well, if you're listening to this, you're probably wondering, and if you're not new to the show, my name's Doug Thornton. I was with DHS for 10 years, prior Marine. I've worked in prisons. I've been a contractor overseas for a very short stint. And now I'm doing this radio show, no longer in law enforcement, and I just have a unique perspective on the world that I don't think many guys who have crossed as many Rubicons as I have so far have come out and really spoke out against the inside baseball game. And I think I have some unique perspectives in the way that I like to read to you, the way I like to teach you history, the way I like to show you my opinion on politics, my opinions on the inside baseball of the government. Maybe you'll find that it's unique. Maybe you'll find that it's interesting. Maybe you won't. I'm not here to hold punches. I'm not here to make favorites. Something I used to tell a lot of my young officers is that I don't get friendship pay, so I'm not here to hold your hand and caress you and tell you the world's going to be okay. There are plenty of other guys out there, so if you want that type of a message, by all means, go view them. I'm not exactly a doom and gloom, doom prophet kind of guy. I find those type of people not to be very helpful, especially within the Christian movement where everything is the sky is falling. I think every now and then it's okay to put a little bit of realism into everything. Yeah. I don't believe that America can be saved. So let's go ahead and just say that. I don't think America can be saved. I think we have crossed a Rubicon on that one. I think individuals in America can be saved. I think individuals in America can, once we are divided amongst ourselves, I think we can band together. I think we can try to create Judeo-Christian-like communities again. But I think the overall the industrial complex, that is America, I think America is dead and dying. I think America is a dying empire. I'm very pessimistic on that. And I guess you say I'm very pessimistic on it because of the way our politicians treat the American people, the way our government treats the American people. We don't care about our dollar value anymore. We don't care about our Christian values anymore. We care very little about our children in America anymore. Just look at all the transsexuals, all these reprobates that are out there in all these libraries who are having grown men dressing up in skimpy women outfits and they're reading childhood stories to children. For starters, shame on you if you're a parent who does that. Shame on you is about the kindest, sweetest thing that I can say on this radio show. So bless my little heart. That's all I can really say because that is just sickening. Because like half the time, those transsexual, the men dressed up as women, not only are they freak shows to me, but a lot of times they're not just pedophiles. Registered child rapist. And that's who the left wants to read to a bedtime story to your kids. No, thank you. No, thank you. And don't think Texas hasn't fallen victim to that. There's been quite a few of those in Texas. Thankfully, not where I'm at. But I did see something while I was at the feed store today that I thought was, I don't know, I just found it to be pretty inspirational. Me and my wife and the kids, we had to go get a bunch of chicken feed. And I'm trying to find me some new steel targets. I have a Sig Sauer 716, which is chambered in 6.5 Creedmoor, that I just want to tighten up my minute of angle. And I'm looking for some good steel targets, and they didn't have very many of the ones that I normally get. And I saw the counter where all the guns are being sold. And I just went, wow. From the right to the left, 100 feet of just solid guns. And I don't know why, maybe so damn proud as an American to sit there and look at that and go, man, I hope every single one of these guns finds a true patriot today. or sometime this year, before they inevitably be taken away from us. I strongly believe we have a government. I strongly believe we have a government and actors within our government who want to disarm Americans. And they can't tell you why. They'll say, well, to help, you know, with crime rate or to help protect our kids. I taught active shooter for a long time, for 10 years. I've taught active shooter lessons to federal employees. For 10 years straight, do you know it's been the most stable comment that I have had in every single one of those classrooms that I've taught in? Not from me, but from someone in the crowd. A good guy with a gun generally stops the bad guy with a gun. That's pretty true. You know, I mean, hopefully the good guy with the gun also has training on how to use that gun and actually uses that gun. I will say this. Don't be confused. If you do purchase a firearm, it does not make you invincible. If you do own a firearm, it does not make you a one-shot sniper. You need to train with your firearm. If it's a pistol, you need to have a good holster, good ammunition, good magazine, and good skills of how to employ that pistol. Not just for your own personal protection, but hey, maybe for other people, right? So, just because you accumulate all the gear does not mean you know how to use it. So please practice accordingly and be safe about it. We don't need to go out there Alec Baldwin everyone that we come by because we don't know how to not squeeze a trigger. God, what a mess that was. Well, I have an inspiring message for you. It's probably going to take a good 30 minutes to get through. And I hope you like it. It is a very original speech. It's from the 1960s. And I feel it is one of those things that strangely almost feels like it was meant for our time. And I'm going to let you hear from a former president, Dwight D. Eisenhower, right after this break.
The time for political correctness is in the rearview mirror. The fact is, the American dollar is on the verge of collapse. It's been abused mightily by those in power. Massive debt, massive inflation have left Americans with few options. Most think they have no choice but to ride it out with their money in the bank. And sadly, they're going to awaken one day and all that money is going to be gone. Do you have an option? The answer is yes. Precious metals. But knowing to go into precious metals is not the same thing as knowing who to go into precious metals with. We have an answer for you. It's called Renaissance Precious Metals. It's owned and operated by the famed Steve Quayle, radio talk show host, world famous, and an expert in precious metals. Been doing the work for 34 years. So whether you're interested in gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, whatever your interest is, wherever you want to land in your escape pod, this is it. Renaissance Precious Metals can be reached at 406-586-4842. Call Steve Quayle at 406-586-4842. You can also visit them online at sqmetals.com. Ladies and gentlemen, don't wait. The collapse is underway. The time to act is now.
Welcome back to American Vindicta. I'm going to see if I can get through this whole speech without screwing up my words some way. The Military-Industrial Complex Speech, Dwight D. Eisenhower, 1961. My fellow Americans, 3 days from now, after half a century in the service of our country, I shall lay down the responsibilities of office as, in traditional and solemn ceremony, the authority of the presidency is vested in my successor. This evening, I come to you with a message of leave, taking and farewell, to share a few final thoughts with you, my countrymen. Like every other citizen, I wish the new president and all who labor with him Godspeed. I pray that the coming years will be blessed with peace and prosperity for all. Our people expect their president and the Congress to find essential agreement on issues of great moment, the wise resolution of which will better shape the future of the nation. My own relations with the Congress, which began on a remote, tenuous basis when, long ago, a member of the Senate appointed me to West Point, and have since ranged to the intimate during the war and immediate post-war period, and finally to the mutually interdependent during these past 8 years. In this final relationship, the Congress and the administration have, on most vital issues, cooperated well to serve the national good rather than mere partisanship, and so have assured that the business of the nation should go forward. So, my official relationship with Congress ends in a feeling on my part of gratitude that we have been able to do so much together. We now stand 10 years past the midpoint of a century that has witnessed 4 major wars among great nations. 3 of these involved our own country. Despite these holocausts, America is today the strongest and the most influential and most productive nation in the world. Understandably, proud of this preeminence, we yet realize that America's leadership and prestige depend not merely upon our unmatched material progress, riches, and military strength, but on how we use our power in the interests of world peace and human betterment. Throughout America's adventure in free government, our basic purposes have been to keep the peace, to foster progress in human achievement, and to enhance liberty, dignity, and integrity among people and among nations. To strive for less would be unworthy of a free and religious people. Any failure traceable to arrogance or our lack of comprehension or readiness to sacrifice would inflict upon us grievous hurt both at home and abroad. Progress toward these noble goals is persistently threatened by the conflict now engulfing the world. It commands our whole attention. It absorbs our very beings. We face a hostile ideology, global in scope, atheistic in character, ruthless in purpose, and insidious in method. Unhappily, the danger it possesses promises to be of indefinite duration. To meet it successfully, there is called for not so much the emotional and transitory sacrifices of crisis, but rather those which enable us to carry forward steadily, surely, and without complaint, the burdens of a prolonged and complex struggle with liberty the stake. Only thus shall we remain, despite every provocation, on our charted course toward permanent peace and human betterment. Crisis there will be to continue. In meeting them, whether foreign or domestic, great or small, there is a recurring temptation to feel that some spectacular and costly action could become the miraculous solution to all current difficulties. A huge increase in newer elements of our defense, development of unrealistic programs to cure every illness in agriculture, a dramatic expansion in basic and applied research. These and many other possibilities, each possibly promising in itself, may be suggested the only way to the road we wish to travel. But each proposal must be weighed in the light of a broader consideration. The need to maintain balance in and among national programs, balance between the private and the public economy, balance between cost and hoped for advantage, balance between the clearly necessary and the comfortably desirable, balance between our essential requirements as a nation and the duties imposed by the nation upon the individual, balance between actions of the moment and the national welfare of the future. Good judgment seeks balance and progress. Lack of it eventually finds imbalance and frustration. The record of many decades stands as proof that our people and their government have, in the main, understood these truths and have responded to them well in the faces of stress and threat. But threats, new in kind or degree, constantly arise. I mention two only. A vital element in keeping the peace is our military establishment. Our arms must be mighty, ready for instant action, so that no potential aggressor may be tempted to risk his own destruction. Our military organization today bears little relation to that known by any of my predecessors in peacetime or indeed by the fighting men of World War II or Korea. Until the latest of our world conflicts, the United States has had no armaments industry. American makers of plowshares could, with time and as required, make swords as well. But now, we can no longer risk emergency improvisation of national defense. We have been compelled to create a permanent armaments industry of vast proportions. Added to this, 3.5 million men and women are directly engaged in the defense establishment. We annually spend on military security more than the net income of all United States corporations. This conjunction of an immense military establishment and a large arms industry is new in the American experience. The total influence, economic, political, even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government. We recognize the imperative need for this development. Yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. Our toil, resources, and livelihood are all involved. So is the very structure of our society. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists, and it will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals so that the security and liberty may prosper together. Akin to, and largely responsible for, the sweeping changes in our industrial military posture has been the technological revolution during recent decades. In this revolution, research has become central. It also becomes more formalized, complex, and costly. A steadily increasing share is conducted for, by, or at the direction of the federal government. Today, the solitary inventor, tinkering in his shop, has been overshadowed by task forces of scientists and laboratories and testing fields. In the same fashion, the free university, historically the fountainhead of free ideas and scientific discovery, has experienced a revolution in the conduct of research. Partly because of the huge costs involved, a government contract becomes virtually a substitute for intellectual curiosity. For every old blackboard, there are now hundreds of new electronic computers. The prospect of domination of the nation's scholars by federal government, by federal employment, project allocations, and the power of money is ever present and is gravely to be regarded. Yet, in holding scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific technological elite. It is the task of a statesmanship to mold, to balance, and to integrate these and other forces, new and old, within the principles of our democratic system, ever aiming toward the supreme goals of our free society. Another factor in maintaining balance involves the element of time. As we peer into society's future, we, you and I, and our government, we must avoid the impulse to live only for today, plundering for our own ease and convenience the precious resources of tomorrow. We cannot mortgage the material assets of our grandchildren without risking the loss also of their political and spiritual heritage. We want democracy to survive for all generations to come, and not to become the insolvent phantom of tomorrow. Down the long lane of the history yet to be written, America knows that this world of ours, ever growing smaller, must avoid becoming a community of dreadful fear and hate, and be instead a proud confederation of mutual trust and respect. Such a confederation must be one of equals. The weakest must come to the conference table with the same confidence as do we, protected as we are by our moral, economic, and military strength. That table, though scarred by many past frustrations, cannot be abandoned for the certain agony of the battlefield. Disarmament with mutual honor and confidence is a continuing imperative. Together we must learn how to compose differences, not with arms, but with intellect and decent purpose. Because this need is so sharp and apparent, I confess that I lay down my official responsibilities in this field with a definite sense of disappointment. As one who has witnessed the horror and the lingering sadness of war, as one who knows that another war could utterly destroy this civilization, which has been so slowly and painfully built over thousands of years, I wish I could say tonight that a lasting peace is in sight. Happily, I can say that war has been avoided. Steady progress toward our ultimate goal has been made, but so much remains to be done. As a private citizen, I shall never cease to do what little I can do to help the world advance along that road. So, in this, my last good night to you as your president, I thank you for the many opportunities you have given me for public service in war and in peace. I trust that service you find some things worthy. As for the rest of it, I know you will find ways to improve performance in the future. You and I, my fellow citizens, need to be strong in our faith that all nations, under God, will reach the goal of peace with justice. May we be ever unswerving in devotion to principle, confident but humble with power, diligent in pursuit of the nation's greatest goals. To all the peoples of the world, I once more give expression to America's prayerful and continuing aspiration. What words of wisdom from former President Dwight D. Eisenhower, 1961. How much of that, ladies and gentlemen, for starters, how much of it did I screw up? How much of that sounds almost like now? How much of the military-industrial complex or the technocratic elite are still around? Are we still talking about the same people? We know the military-industrial complex has only gained in popularity. It's only gained in power, in influence. But it has been overshadowed by the technocratic elite. And I think there's a reason for that. I think as we go further on into human history and further on into the human future, we see that total world war, though it is always a risk, is not acceptable for people's, how would you say, quarterly statement. When we have evil men and women in this world who have invested quite a few billions and trillions of dollars, they can't just have you destroying it all. But they also can't just let you run around and do whatever you want. These people, they want control. That's why they have so much money. You would think if they had so much money, they would be philanthropists and trying to, you know, cure cancer and, you know. But they're not. You would expect with as many billionaires there is out there that we would have at least one real Batman. But we don't. We have plenty of penguins, plenty of Jokers, but no Batman. Not even one Catwoman. Sucks. But I will assure you this. You have people out there that have so much money that they can buy your family, depending on the country they're in. They can buy your family with the money that they carry around just in their pockets. I know some of these very, very wealthy, well-to-do people. One of them I would like to say I'm friends with. He's a philanthropist, and he has shown just how much he loves God and he loves helping people. And his name's Gary Haven. But not very many people out there, like Mr. Haven, are spending their own dime helping people. Many of them are out there spending their own dime trying to figure out how to put you further under their boot. And I think in 2022, we may just see more of that. And, you know, during 2021, we saw politicians who had an element of control given to them because of a pandemic or plandemic. And we saw that these people let power go straight to their head, and it corrupted them to the point that it was just head-shakingly unbelievable. We saw politicians, mainly leftist, strange, isn't it? Mainly Democrats, who would willfully throw your Constitution in the garbage, who would willfully take away your liberties, make you wear the mask, make you stand 6 feet away from somebody. Hell, don't even dare look at somebody. They may catch COVID through their glaze. And then you have this idiot, AOC, who will, you know, she'll stand up and down in Congress shouting about masks and COVID vaccines, and we need to vaccinate everybody, and when the aliens come, we're going to need to vaccinate them too. We don't want them catching COVID. You know, then she goes down to Florida. No mask. No mask, out at concerts, goofing off, acting like the young idiot that she is. And I'm older than her, so I can say that. You know, these people that we have put in power, we didn't, and I want to say this, we put them in power. We didn't elect them to go and, you know, address our grievances as a people of a state to the federal government. No, we put them in power. In my own personal opinion, congressmen and senators should not get paid. They should not be paid at all by the federal government. I don't think a congressman or senator should make above $100,000. And if so, you're a state employee. And I mean like highly regulated. However, I can wish all day that I want. It's not going to happen. And whenever these people get the chance to take more power, they're going to take more of your rights. They go hand in hand. I want more power, but you can't have those rights. I want more guards, and I want a bullet-resistant vehicle to be chauffeured in. But you can't have suppressors, and you can't have semi-automatic firearms. And Doug, you damn sure can't have a 50 cal. Which I do. But you can't have all those things because my guards need them. You know what's funny about Nancy Pelosi and Maxine Waters? Whenever all the riots were breaking out last year, especially up in the Kenosha area, Maxine Waters, who, you know, she's not only is she a lunatic, but she's an idiot. But she went all the way up there. And you know, she's been all about defund the police and all police are racist and blah, blah, blah. And she went up there and you know what she asked for? The state police as an escort. Hypocrisy knows no bounds with these people. I remember when I was on the border years ago, and we were, this was 2018, and we were working the big, big, massive rush of people that were coming across the El Paso sector. And, God, it was funny because, I mean, not only was it just atrocious how many people were coming over the border that we just could not catch, or the ones that we would catch, you would sit there with, you know, three, within 30 seconds would be five, within 2 minutes would be 20, within 30 minutes would be 200 to 300 people. And the 12-hour shift was 1,000 people a day or more, every single day. One day, within a matter of, I think, like 3 hours, we had 3,000 people within, like, I don't know, probably 1,000 yards from one end to the other, from where the gaps of the fence are. If you're from El Paso, if you're a Border Patrol and you work the El Paso sector, you know right where I'm talking about. And, you know, we had these congressmen and senators who would come down there, and they would have their armed escorts by we the police, and we would take their merry ass from one end of the border all the way up to the other. Look, that's where someone's floating in the river. Look, that's the coyotes that are passing human traffickers, which are, you know, more than likely sex slaves. Oh, look, here's some heroin going that way. Here's a bunch of people over here who are crossing the border illegally. Could be terrorists. We don't know. You want to help us? Give us some funding? Give us some extra support, manpower? How about overtime? How about you come down here, Mr. and Mrs. Senator, Mr. and Mrs. Congresswoman or man? How about you come work a 12-hour shift with me on the border? Nope. But they would lovely. These lovely people will say, well, Mr. and Mrs. American, turn your guns in. See, that's where you got to know that all this is going wrong. We have politicians, and don't think these people don't read these intelligence reports. Don't think these people that are within Congress and Senate, or these higher-ups, these idiots, these muckety-mucks that are in the government from the SES level to the GS-15 level, not all are bad. I have to say that. Not all are bad. Just general amount of them are stupid and don't care about America. Don't think they don't get these reports. Don't think they don't get updated every night, every day, every week of how many people cross the border, of how many crimes we're trying to prevent. You know, I mean, if you could have just seen the amount of unaccompanied minors. And here's something that really upset me so bad that I actually had to take a day off. We had one day, I think I probably transported close to, I don't know, 12 kids. Not one was above the age of 5 who walked across the border. I saw the coyote in Juarez, Mexico, point at me and my group of guys that were standing around, and they walked over there towards us, and they just looked up at us, and, you know, they didn't speak English. My Spanish is terrible. And as a father, the only thing I could do for the infant that was in diapers was just pick the little boy up and hold him, and I'm not lying that I became so enraged that I did not have a response for what I was holding in my arms. I did not know how to comfort except for the best that I could. And I see these people like AOC and Maxine Waters and Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer talk about Trump putting kids in cages. Well, for one thing, a isolation chamber, a holding chamber, is what it has always been. In law enforcement, we don't have a room filled full of lush bunk beds with my pillow smacked all over everything so that you have a wonderful night's sleep. And I'm not paid by MyPillow, but those are really nice pillows. I'm just saying. But you know, we don't have a 5-star luxury hotel to put people who are violating the laws of our United States coming across the border illegally. You know, we put them in what every police jail detention facility looks like. It sucks. Don't get in trouble. Don't go to it. That's a real common sense theme. Don't tell all the inmates that, but, you know. I guess that's one proof of Darwinism. But what I'm trying to say is these politicians that would sit there, and this was during the same time that AOC faked her scandal with crying and pleading in front of a fence in a parking lot nowhere near the border. With those fake tears, those fake crocodile tears about kids in cages. Let me tell you something, lady. You were invited. You Democrats were invited to come down. I remember when it was said. I remember how many of us said it. From my agency to the Border Patrol that was down there, to Customs and Border Patrol, the blue side and the green side. I remember when we were all saying, bring their happy asses down here. Let them see the cartel. Let them see the gunfights. Let them see the murders. Let them see the crime spree. Let them see the tunnels or the drugs or all the child sex slaves that we catch. Let them come and see them. Let them do their fingerprints. Search them with us. Watch my back while it's just me and 30 or 70 people and I have no support anywhere because you refuse to give us manpower. Just think about that. We had guys that literally patrolling the sector by themselves, and we would catch, and I mean, like, I sat there with 98 people, I think within about 10 minutes of just sitting in this one spot, had about 98 people show up. And then my buddies are going back and forth transporting people to detention facilities and back to the line, which is what we called the line where the United States is, and Mexico, we call it the line. And we're going back and forth, and, you know, I'm just sitting there going, well, I only have so many bullets on me if this gets really bad, so... You know, you don't think about it until you're there by yourself, and then you try to start, you know, talking to people, and then people try talking to you, and then people try circling around you. You know, you're always and every single time outnumbered, almost always and every single time for a period of time by yourself dealing with these people. You know, luckily for the most part, the people coming across the border would just stop. They would stop or they'd come right to you. But occasionally, we got in fights with them. We had to put handcuffs on them to try and detain them, try and gain control of the subject while they're, you know, either fleeing or while they're actively resisting, which, who knows, they could grab your gun and shoot you with it. Once again, things these politicians refuse to hear. They get the reports, but they refuse to listen. They refuse to read. Judging by the way some of them think, maybe they can't read. I don't know. I'm just guessing. I'm just shooting an arrow in the dark. But I will tell you this much. Our politicians, I believe, are being paid to ignore the real security threats in this country. And they're being told to make up other security threats that they make up themselves. Last week, I read to you in episode 33, Operation Northwoods, and I told you extensively the entire paper. That's one thing I believe I do that no one else does. I don't summarize a lot of these things for you. I literally read the entire document. I hope it's not boring. I hope it's not too dry. Hope the logs that you're sawing, they're not falling off and hitting you in the head, but, you know, you need to understand full context, because you have a lot of people who will speak to you and they'll give you snippets and then they'll say, go do your own research. You and I both know that more than likely, if you're listening to my voice right now, you would rather me just tell you, or you're busy. So if you're busy and you're just listening to me as a form of entertainment, well, for one thing, thank you. But for two, it's my job as the narrator of this story to give you the entire story. We're going to go to a break, and we will be right back.
Klaus Schwab from the World Economic Forum has said, you will own nothing, and you will love it. And that's represented by what's going on across the planet today, where the economy of the world is in free fall, and nowhere is it more in evidence than with our own President Biden deliberately trying to sabotage what we have, access to food, other resources. So Americans are in a unique position, really for the first time in our history. We're going to have to provide for ourselves or subject ourselves to the whim of the government. Do you really trust a government to feed you that left 1,000 Americans behind enemy lines in Afghanistan? I don't think so. So where do you go? When you ask the question, who's the best prepper out there today? There's only one answer. Ready-Made Resources and Robert Griswold. I call him King Prepper, and that's how a lot of people think of him. You have everything there you'd want, from night vision to storable food, how to prepare cooking in emergency situations, books and videos on how to prepare alternative energy, communication, first aid that you wouldn't think of, natural antibiotics, you name it, Bob has it. Now, here's the good thing about Bob Griswold that no one else does but him. You don't have to buy anything to talk to him. If you're not sure where to start with your preparation, no obligation phone call directly to Bob. You can talk to him for free. Most people will charge you an arm and a leg for a half-hour conversation. That's not Bob Griswold. He cares about helping America get prepared. Go to readymaderesources.com, or you can call the number directly at 800-627-3809. Again, that contact information, readymaderesources.com, for the best prepping outfit in the country, or call Bob Griswold directly, 800-627-3809.
And welcome back to American Vindicta. Sorry about having that very, very late commercial, but, you know, I get paid by sponsors, so I have to put in their commercials, otherwise they'll yell at me. To all my friends in Canada, 2022 may be a very, very important year to you. You may be seeing the stripping away of your right to bear arms in your own country. Please, purchase the firearms while you can. Do not relinquish them. Hold on to them and fight against your tyrannical government. Go out, protest, vote, get legal representation, sue the hell out of your government. Do not let them take your guns. If they take your guns, there is no fighting back from a tyranny. You cannot overtake them. Canada, the chair is against the door. Don't lose your country. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening, and I wish you all a happy 2022. My name is Doug Thornton. This is American Vindicta. Out. all stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.